Inexplicable by Karen Johnston. Inexplicable how we rise each morning instead of burying our heads under bed covers, sewing them shut. Why we keep on welcoming babies with bone-deep joy to this sordid world. How we fill burlap sacks with grit and gratitude, our hands shredded as we drag one over the other. How we refuse the daily pull towards greedy dark, keeping at least one toe, some of us a whole torso, in the light. Inexplicable. It's what makes a poem worth writing, worth reading, worth flooding the world with redundant, flawed attempts at explanation. It's just the way it is. There is no other way. Stumbling every time, practice or no. Just part of the bargain, the unavoidable, intractable, inexplicable bargain. So I will be on sabbatical for 2 months, something that I am completely ambivalent about, even at this moment. Last week, it became very clear to me that it was obvious that I was ambivalent because I put the wrong date on the brochure, which had been proofread, I don't know, 15 times. I thought, oh, well, at least you all know that it's another moment when you can't quite figure out how to do this. So that's why this reading about the ways that we stumble even when we're practicing and prepared and sometimes aren't. It's hard to pause in the middle of everything happening. And that's always true. It's just that everything seems to be particularly intensely true at this moment in the world. So I want you to know a few things. One is that the worship that has been planned is wonderful. Next week, you will hear from several members of this congregation about their stories, really from those early childhood stories to their present engagement with the world, but the story of the inner life. You'll get to hear from Dr. Courtney Marshall, who has started at Phillips Exeter Academy this year. If you were at the Martin Luther King Day breakfast, you got to hear her. She's fantastic. Elizabeth Siwo Okundi will be back. If you've been here any of the times that she's been here over how many, 3-4 years now that she's come on and off, she's also fantastic. One of my favorite research chemist ethicists is coming to speak. That's my father. The rabbi from Dover is coming. All kinds of good stuff. Good perspectives on this world, I think deep ways to fill the well in deep ways. And it's exciting to me that that can happen, because most months we don't get to have that much variety come in. So that part I'm excited about, and I'm very grateful that Herb will post these on the web so I can watch from the very back row, which is my living room. And I'll do some writing and sort out my writings. I do a lot of writing, and I just keep moving on to the next. And it's good to not just keep moving on to the next. You've maybe had a moment in your own life when you've been able to pause and notice what you've been doing. They're good moments. So as I look through that writing and create that writing, I'll send it off to Yvonne, who will send it off to you. And at the end of March, after the spring equinox has arrived, I'm going to travel out to Standing Rock in the hopes that there won't be a blizzard then. And I'm hoping that maybe a few of us could go together. So if you would like to go, get in touch with Ann Barlow. The information is in the that sabbatical brochure, which says I'm already on sabbatical now. And through secret channels, Ann will get in touch with me and we'll see if we can coordinate. So here is some of the things that I will be doing in my kitchen and living room. That writing and preparing to go off and engage one of the big justice movements of our time. And I also want to tell you about some of the small things that will be happening at my house. I am in a Facebook group on parenting in this moment in society. And someone asked what people were doing about talking to their preschool-age children about politics and protesting. And lots of people were saying that they weren't talking to their young children. And I thought, well, so I told them this story, and I've told a few people this story. Last weekend, everyone in my house had the cold that everyone has had. So John took a nap, which is just a stunning thing for a parent to get to do. And I decided that Ronan and I would go outside. It looked like it was possible to do that. So I found a Sharpie, of all things, to write the note with. And Ronan watched me, as he does, watch every move I make, write going to the park. And I wrote it pretty big so that John would see it, so he wouldn't miss it. And Ronan picked it up and so took off with the note. I thought, oh. And he said, what does this sign say? You got it faster than I did. I figured out after a minute that having written this note in a Sharpie was a cue to him that this was a sign for a march. And then he said from the other side of the kitchen, holding up this note, let's play Donald Trump and the Women's March. Like it was a game that we would get to play together. He, of course, having the sign, was the marcher, and he assigned me the role. But then he also, I had to tell him what to say, and I had to give my line. So I had to sort of step in and out of character. So I told him that he had to march around and say, "I'm going to march." I had to translate it a little bit, and then he wanted to know what I was going to say. I thought, what am I going to say? So I basically just told him he shouldn't march. And he hesitated over there on his side of the kitchen because I had just told him not to march. And I said, no. The point is, you march even if I say you shouldn't. Then he got into his three-year-old spirit and marched around the kitchen. And now this is a game we play at our house. So that's one of the things I'll be doing in the next couple months, is playing that game. So it would appear that I am in favor of talking to preschool-age children about what's going on. And that's how it is in our house, that we just talk about everything. We just do. We figure out how to translate it for the moment in life that everyone is in. And a few people I've told that story to have sort of, I think they were a little stunned that I was encouraging the protester in my 3, not quite 4-year-old. And I'm raising a Unitarian Universalist child, so that's what's going to happen. And also, it's true that he's a pretty compliant and cooperative child. He's just, his temperament is such that he tends to sort of sit back a little and listen. And I want to make sure that he has options for engaging the world, that he has that just innate quality of observing and sitting back, and also the capacity to hold up his sign and say, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, even if someone tells me that I shouldn't. And I'm hoping that I'll help him learn how to use those different parts of himself at different times, and that each of them is important and powerful, and it's good to have options. Which is, of course, much more easily said than done. So that's part of what I'll be working on in my kitchen, for myself also. And having someone in my house turn it into a game where there's plenty of laughter makes it easier to find options and think about it a little differently for myself, let alone for him. When something happens, you've probably noticed, my tendency is to, let's start something, let's get organized, let's head out into the streets or onto the petitions or to go, go. Meanwhile, I know it's also useful to sit and think about, how do we put the pieces together? How do we build connections where there aren't connections right now? How do we reinvent our response so that it's different, so that we might get a different reaction? One of the things that I have said several times is that I think one of the most important responses, one of the most effective responses, will be an economic one. And then I get busy doing the 1,000 other things and forget to think about what are the ways that we can engage an economic and financial response to this moment, because that is the currency of this era, of this wave of people in power. So I will be thinking about that, about how we speak that language effectively. And I have also recently read an article in Sojourners magazine, which I will post for you in the next couple weeks. Sojourners magazine is a magazine and an organization that is very clear that they're about biblically grounded social justice work. They're very Christian and very engaged in how do we make the world better. And they're very clear that the Bible was written from the perspective of refugees, low-income people, women, all of the people who tend to have less power in society, that that's the perspective that the Bible is written from, and that's the perspective that they act from. So I found one article that listed spiritual strategies for this moment in time, which it's this fabulous long article, which I will post for you within the next couple weeks, because I can't tell you all of its wonderfulness right now, except to tell you what the 5 strategies are. One is memory, telling the story of our tradition, of our wisdom, of our people, which is why I keep telling you the story of the chalice. It's one of the ways that we remember who we are, remember how we have been this way for a long time. Truth is the second strategy. And some of what they define as truth is what I just described for you about their perspective on the Bible, on the way truth is seen. But also the claim that there are things that are solid and reliable in the world that we can turn to. The third strategy is community. And this is something that this congregation does beautifully. You've heard it this morning in Joys and Sorrows. It's community for resistance, absolutely, but this author says resistance alone does not sustain a community. Meaning, hearing what's happening in each other's lives, tending each other's hearts, just being kind to each other in regular daily life is part of what gives us the spiritual resource to meet whatever is happening. Suffering is the fourth one. And the way they talk about suffering is the fact that things will happen that are beyond our control, and we have to live with that. Just a really interesting definition of suffering. Things will happen that are beyond our control, and we have to live with that. Stay present for it. Stay engaged with it, even though it's beyond our control. And lastly, solidarity, which means just opening our embrace to the world, remembering that there are people that we don't normally make contact with. In our case, it may be people of color. It may be refugees. In this town, you can forget how much we are connected to those communities, and to keep turning our minds and our hearts to those communities so that we are truly together. Because we are together already. We just forget that the connection is there. Which gets us back to memory, telling the stories about how our tradition has engaged the world. So I'll send you that story of the chalice soon also. And next week, you are invited to be part of a meeting in this room at 11 o'clock to vote on the Declaration of Conscience, which is Unitarian Universalists declaring how we want to live in this moment. If you haven't seen that Declaration of Conscience, there are copies in the community room as you go back for social hour. Yvonne is waving the announcement page at me and saying, I put it in the announcement page, Kendra, because everyone needs to read it. You don't have to go back there. You've got it in your hands. Now you're all waving it at me. Fantastic. Read it. We're going to vote on it next week. I will be, I'll have my antenna up from afar. So that meeting is at 11, and then after that meeting, there'll be a conversation about the bylaws for this congregation, how we maintain our institution, as Donna talked about, that place where you have some structure and some commitments to keep things running and reliable without having too much hierarchy, that we're in that, I agree with Donna, in that perfect balance, the middle path. So all kinds of things are going to happen here, and I'm going to be just a step away, taking a breath from my part of the singing, my part of the choral arrangement that is this congregation. And I know that it's good to catch your breath so that you can come back and be part of the song. And I'm sorry to miss what will happen in these next couple months here, although I have a feeling I'm going to see a few of you on a few street corners between now and then. And then just after that spring equinox, just before Easter, I'll be back and we'll take up the song together again. I'll try to catch up. I'll keep my hiking boots on so that I can catch up. And then we'll really step into spring together. Step into whatever is next together. I will miss you during these 2 months. And I will be glad to see you in the spring.